Hey guys, it's Ryan Joe, Managing Editor of AdExchanger. Join us April 29th as the AdExchanger Awards recognizes the strongest achievements in the past year by leaders in the marketing and media industries. The AdExchanger Awards program will take place at Programmatic I.O. San Francisco, where more than 100 expert speakers and 1,500 attendees will gather to learn and discuss the latest in programmatic media and marketing. Join us in celebrating the future of advertising and marketing. Visit AdExchangerAwards.com.
Welcome to AdExchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
This episode is supported by Neustar Marketing Solutions. The Neustar Identity DMP is the only DMP with built-in identity. Later in this episode, VP of Product Marketing, Alex LePage, will chat with AdExchanger about what still prevents marketers from achieving true people-based, customer-centric marketing, what makes an identity DMP superior to commoditized tech stacks, and why Neustar is the best-kept secret among top enterprise marketers.
Hey everyone, this is Zach Rogers. I'm the executive editor of AdExchanger. Good to be with you again. So in a changing world, you sometimes have to kind of forget what you know. My guest in the studio today runs an ad tech business that is trying to help the industry do that. Walter Knapp spent the early part of his career managing field operations for big software and services companies. Later, he got into ad tech, working at companies targeting the mid-tail of search and publishing activity. Today, he is the CEO of Sovereign. Sovereign used to be a pretty straightforward ad exchange, has lately broadened its mission. It raised $25 million in October 2018 and signaled that it would start buying technologies to help publishers beyond ad monetization. I'm pleased to have him in the studio. Walter, welcome.
Zach, good to see you.
Good to see you too. Walter rolled in here with his suitcase. Where are you flying to?
I'm back home to Boulder, Colorado.
Okay, good. Is it hard to run an advertising technology business from the middle of the country?
Probably. But nobody told me that when we started it.
Okay.
What's nice about, so can I back up and give you a little history on me and I'll weave it into your Boulder question?
Oh, yeah, please.
So I moved to Colorado in 1994 to go to graduate school. And I was seeking out a very specific engineering degree. So I got my master's in engineering in what was then referred to as the study of the information superhighway, which we now know as the internet or the web.
I remember when we called it that.
Right. And so interestingly, there were only two schools in the country that offered a very specific degree in understanding that. That thing. One was MIT, and I couldn't get into it. And the other one was the University of Colorado at Boulder. And people ask why, and it's going to get to your question. So the interesting thing is Boulder, or Denver, I should say, which is, you know, 20 minutes down the road, is the only major metropolitan area and it in the United States, or the contiguous United States, that can actually communicate over satellite at the time with both Europe and Asia from one terrestrial point. So a lot of telecommunications and cable companies and people who are essentially building the groundwork of the internet all located their major head-ins in Denver and sponsored engineering programs at the university. And that's why they had that particular program.
Oh.
That's why I moved there.
I see.
So I moved there, yeah, in 1994, got my master's in engineering and started my first company there in 1995. So staying there for me wasn't an option. I just did it.
Where were you from?
I grew up in the Bay Area.
Originally. Okay.
Yeah. So Silicon Valley.
So you had seen technology culture up close.
Oh, yeah. I grew up in a—
Did you have an inkling of the internet in 94?
Yeah. So I was actually working after college. I went to college in Boston, and I was working for a small startup company selling advertising. Advertising at that time was done when you did an ad design, you faxed it back and forth, and it was this incredibly clunky business. And there, in 1994, 95, around that time, there was about a bunch of noise about the World Wide Web. Yahoo was sort of indexing the internet. Google had not launched yet. Netscape went public, and I knew it was going to be transformative. And I said, I need to understand how this technology is built, and I should go to graduate school to learn about that. So that's what I did.
Okay. We'll fast forward through the next 10 years.
Okay.
I don't think there's like a lot the listeners need to hear. Although you worked in software and services.
And then
left that world to enter the ad tech space.
Yeah, so I worked for mostly enterprise software,
building,
you know, what are now known as web applications, for a couple of really big public companies. I was fortunate to have some pretty significant roles at a pretty young age. I decided in I think it was 2007 that I was gonna do something different. The Foundry Group guys, who I'd known for a long time, a VC firm who's pretty active and well known in this space now, had invested in a really small company called Legit. And Legit was, I think when I joined, it was like five people. And a folding table, you know, and I was not a founder, but I was asked by the founder to join and be his partner and see if we could build something, and we did. We did on-site search, so search on a publisher's website for thousands and thousands of publishers, we built that company. And what we got really good at when you do that is you get really good at capturing, processing, and using data about not only the site, but about the readers to deliver relevant search results. I mean, readers and the publishers are very demanding about what results get returned. And if you're going to run a search engine, it's very difficult to do. And it's a fundamentally different value proposition than Google, which is really just a reader-centric search. We were building a publisher-centric search. We didn't have a monetization strategy. Ours was just, you know, hey, we're going to deliver these products at Legit for publishers. And we got into it and we realized we're really good at capturing, processing, and using data at massive scale. And it turns out that can be applied to what is now known as programmatic marketing. So at Legit, we built, what I think is now referred to as an ad exchange. We didn't know any different. We just said, hey, we're going to use data and we're going to use automation and we're going to be able to allow people to buy advertisements when and if they want in a bidded environment. And we wrote an RTB engine and we did, you know, and Federated Media spotted us. And I think Legit had done a very small amount of revenue, but we were growing really fast. And Federated Media guys approached us and made us an offer to buy the company that we took.
Remind me what year that was?
We closed that deal in October of 2010.
Okay. Right before programmatic kind of exploded.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't. It was, I guess, you know, we felt like our revenue was exploding. I mean, in 2009, I think we did $1 million in revenue.
Did you have a big argument internally about whether it was the right time to sell? Or was everyone pretty much ready?
I mean, super contentious. You know? Yeah, like okay. We had
Were you pro or against?
Well, it's easy in hindsight to say that I was. It didn't turn out well. Okay. So I think we were all pro the deal at the time. I mean, yeah. I really liked John Battelle and what he was doing at Federated Media. I'd read his book, The Search. I don't know if you, it's way ahead of his time. I'd gotten to know John. And it was a really interesting story. And there are through lines of the story from Legit through Federated Media and into what we do at Sovereign, even though Sovereign is a different company, there's a thinking that I think built on itself over those years and through those companies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tease that out a little bit. What is the thinking? What's the core thesis with these three companies?
Well, so the way I think about business is every interesting company solves an important problem for someone else. And the idea that we had at Legit was to connect readers to the content and the publishers that they were super passionate about. I mean, that was the idea. And we did it through on-site search, which, if you think about it, is one of the only places that a reader on your website will actually express an intention or an interest against your content. So, mm-hmm. you know, otherwise it's very passive, right? They're coming from, you know, a link that someone sent them or a click on an email or a search result, something like that. But when they're on your site and they actually believe you know something about something and they express that intent, that occurs in the search box. And it's an incredible sort of mm-hmm. value connection if you think right. about it. And so the idea behind Legit was, hey, if we can better connect readers and the publishers and the content that they're interested in, we can help both parties. Like, we can help the readers get what they want, and we can help the publishers discover what they should be writing about, have a better connection with their readers. And then that will give way to monetization strategies, whether it's advertising or e-commerce or other things, or events, subscriptions, what have you. So that was the thesis behind Legit.
So basically bring readers and publishers closer together. And then there's an outgrowth of that, which is different types of revenue opportunities.
Right. So revenue is always a byproduct of some value that you've created, right? And in mm-hmm. this place, the value creation was the connection or the bond between readers and publishers and mm-hmm. or the content. The revenue that gets generated is a byproduct of that. Mm-hmm. So so Federated Media was a similar idea. John was, you know, a federation of the independent web. So his belief was that there were all these incredible independent publishers that were connecting with really passionate readership. Mm-hmm. And how could you try to capture that? And they spent most of their energy on advertising and sponsored campaigns and what is now known as native advertising. So they were sort of
right.
know, doing that before it was called that. Mm-hmm. And John looked at it and was like, hey, I think his thesis was we're really good at the go-to-market. We're really good at talking to agencies and brands and connect, and creating these really interesting experiences. You guys at Legit are phenomenal with data and products and technology. If we put these two companies together, we can, you know, do great things. Mm-hmm. That was the thesis behind it. And it didn't work out. Which is, I just took a hard right turn on you.
You did. I want to hear about that.
But it didn't work out. Unfortunately, endemic reasons. When you're trying to scale a business through what was really an institutional approach, like a direct sales approach, trying to create handcrafted campaigns, it has a scale limit. So we at Federated Media, the Federated Media business larger, was hitting that scale limit where we try to hire more salespeople. But more salespeople were more expensive, and then you've got some that don't work out, and the ones that do want more money.
Right.
And at the same time, you've got—
And are the buyers also looking to you to do the sort of creative and consulting
work? Right, so they're asking you to do— So we had photo editors and videographers and video editors, and we started to look more and more like an agency.
Yeah.
And that became the sort of, the pull of all of the resources in the company. And then what I meant by endemic—
Margins are just shrinking.
And then the margins were shrinking. So mm-hmm. then you've got, now you're competitive. And then you've got, say, media was competing with us. We would lose great publishers because they would get to a certain size, like Business Insider, and then they would go on their own. In fact, Pete Spandy, who went and ran chief revenue officer for Business Insider,
yep.
was the chief revenue officer at Federated Media immediately prior to that. And this is so, and Pete's a wonderful guy, but he was like, look, I can do this now for Business Insider, and mm-hmm. then he went and did that. And we would lose great sites.
Right, right.
You, like, build them up. They get really popular
then
with the
brands. And then they graduate.
Just and then
as you're
soon
like, as that, you've
oh,
got, like,
shit,
a rhythm
now I
got to
go get another one, yeah. right? And the problem is that flywheel never gets bigger. It just kind of spins.
What about on the Legit side?
So the Legit business, we were heads down building technologies for publishers mm-hmm. To help them do more of what they wanted to do, connect more with their readership, make more money, understand their readership, know what to write about, things like that. And those two entities While the thesis of putting them together made a lot of sense, the actual putting them together was like the gears never really meshed.
Did Legit continue to grow?
It did. Mm-hmm. It did. And it grew really fast. The Federated Media business was declining, yet sucking most of the resources. And mm-hmm. we were not profitable. And in late 2013, John and I decided to sell the company. Mm-hmm. And we attempted to sell, you know, we tried to sell the whole thing. Most people just wanted to buy the Legit asset.
Yeah.
And we found a buyer in Lynn Media, which I think is now Media General, a mm-hmm. large public company, mostly television, radio stations, things like that. And Lynn, you know, they felt like they could take the Federated Media business and make it into something that we couldn't. And we sold it. We sold it to we sold the Federated Media business. Every employee was about 150 or 160 employees on the Federated Media side of the company. They bought the whole thing, hired all the employees, and it was a great outcome, I think, for everybody.
Yeah.
At least like preserving the asset. And what happened on the back of that, and I'm gonna get to the sovereign thing in a second. So what happened was the Legit business and the Legit brand had effectively gone away over the 3 years,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of the employees from Legit had left. And when we sold off the Federated Media business, we sold it for a fair amount of cash. And I took the cash in and it essentially started a new company. So think about I had a box of parts. You know, I had cash. I had a handful of employees. I think we were about 30 or 40 employees at the time. I had a technology stack, and I had a handful of publisher customers using our tech. And in January of 2014, we started Sovereign.
Okay, great. That's a great transition to our ad break. We're going to hear from a sponsor. I'll be right back with Walter Knapp.
Hi, this is Zach Rogers, and I'm joined by Alex LePage, VP of Product Marketing with our sponsor, Neustar. So what differentiates Neustar Identity DMP from its competitors?
Sure. Unlike other tech stacks or other clouds, we have built the identity graph into the DMP and really across the entire platform. So what that means is it's idemic. Everything is organized, all the information against that identity graph. And importantly, that's not our identity graph. It does, the data does draw from our system of record around identity for households and individuals, but it becomes the client's identity graph. And what we're focused on then, what identity graph and an identity DMP then can power really is intelligence, right? So you start with great data and a good understanding of people and of customers. And then we aim to, essentially power all of the marketing decisions that are made. Instead of, what I would say typically the other clouds are great at, is more of the actual execution of that.
Okay, great. Now, what problems are you helping your clients solve?
Sure. As I mentioned, when we have a great sense of the customer and it's organized and it's refreshed and it's up to date, and we've tied it all to a common identity key, then we can do much richer segmentation, right? So we get beyond demographics and even psychographics, but then adding in behavioral and other types of segmentation. And that's when we actually provide a structured data feed out of the DMP to many of our large clients that we call the Data Science Development Kit. That it literally allows the data scientists within that brand to go wild, to go nuts, and to really deeply understand more about the best customers, more about the people that the prospects and the people that they're trying to acquire, essentially to build a build the customer journey and be able to provide better marketing and messaging.
Okay, and what's your advice to large brands?
Sure. What we've started to promote the idea of is another kind of ROI, and that is return on identity. The implication is that if you're not marketing to actual people, right, but you're marketing to IDs that are just tied to cookies that expire, et cetera, then all of your marketing and thus your financial reporting is potentially flawed. And so if we can get every marketer to measure using identity as the coefficient, right, in thinking about and organizing around that common identity, then we will actually be marketing people, and therefore we should calculate how we win and lose, you know, based on that identity as a coefficient. So it's changing the organization that typically sits in silos and are good at marketing to channels. And getting them to think about the customer as the center, and everything then radiates and evolves from that. And if we start, we think, with the measurement piece, then maybe everything else will fall in line.
All right. Terrific. Thanks so much, Alex. Thanks, Neustar.
Thank you, Zach.
And I'm back with Walter from Sovereign. We spent the first half of the podcast talking about everything pre-Sovereign in your career, including the fascinating tale of Legit in FM. So you walked away from that experience and gave yourself a do-over, in a sense. Like, you started a business that was not terribly unlike Legit in its vision and the technology underpinnings.
Yep, that's right.
Fair to say?
There was like I said—
What was it that made you want to do it over?
So there was this through line, and I— Like I said in the outset, I believe that every interesting company solves an important problem for someone else. And when I look at the media business, it's absolutely fascinating business and an incredible window into human behavior. And not necessarily the biggest sites. So I'm very biased towards sites that have a high intensity of meaning to the reader. So if you think about whatever you're passionate about, you know, for me, I don't know you, Zach, as well, but for me, I'm there's a couple of main things that I'm very passionate about. I like obviously the media business, so I like to read and to converse with people about that business and everything that's going on there. So I've been a news junkie about everything that's been happening with the Facebook thing or GDPR or what have you. Mm-hmm. So that's an area. But like in my personal life, my wife and I adopted our son. He's from China. He has a cleft lip and palate. Mm-hmm. And that presents all kinds of interesting challenges. And so, you know, there's sites like the Smile Train, if you've ever been to Smile Train.
Yeah.
And it's very personal to us. Mm-hmm. And then, again, in my personal life, I'm really into cycling. So I race mm-hmm. bicycles. And so I'm really into that. So Bicycling Magazine, Velo News, things like that. These are pretty niche sites. Mm-hmm. But they have a lot of meaning and they speak to me. They influence mm-hmm. my behaviors. They influence my decisions. I'm happy to pay them money. I'm happy to engage with the advertising. If there's an e-commerce opportunity on those sites, I'm happy to engage in that. I sign up for their newsletters. Like, I'm very passionate about all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think if you were to ask virtually anyone, they would be able to recite to you, I'm really into yoga, or I'm really into, you know, I have a family member that's dealing with a particular ailment, Alzheimer's or cancer or some disability. And,
right.
And things mean like that's the area of the internet that is, it's massive mm-hmm. and yet highly fragmented. Mm-hmm. So like tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people that bias towards those things. So my thought with Sovereign was that, again, every interesting company helps solve important problems for someone else. That someone else are these small or mid-sized businesses that are incredibly passionate about a particular topic, that want to spend as much of their time and their energy as possible creating, distributing, and conversing with their readers. That's what they want to do, mm-hmm. right? And then the other pieces of their business are effectively impediments to that or costs to doing that. Mm-hmm. And so could you build a company? So sovereign, I know it's misspelled.
True. Right?
S-O-V-R-N. I can't spell the other one because I don't know if it's I before E or. But
right. I think it's E-I.
But if you go back and you read, I mean, it's one page, right? But when we launched the company in 2014, I wrote a very intentional blog post. And I said, look, sovereign is about giving you the ability to control your own destiny, to do what you want to do, to be independent, to stake your own claim. And the idea behind sovereign was, can we build products and tools and technologies and services that enable media businesses mm-hmm. or the people that run media businesses to do more of what they want to do mm-hmm. and less of what they don't want to do? Mm-hmm. And that was the mission of the company. And okay. so we've, over that time, we've built out one product and one service after another that you might look at them and go, why are they offering a competitor to FastPay, for instance?
Right.
As an ad tech business, why did they go out and build a consent management tool for publishers? Mm-hmm. We have probably 6 or 7 different products that we offer. Why did you go raise this money and then buy an e-commerce mm-hmm. tool for publishers?
Mm-hmm.
And
it referrals, links, right? Yep. Management, VigLink.
The VigLink business is a fascinating business, and I'm mm-hmm. That business. If a publisher wants to take advantage of e-commerce, so mm-hmm. There are a variety of ways to do that. Again, I wrote a whole post on this. If they generate consumer interest and consumer intent to purchase a product or what have you, the commerce business at Sovereign now, which is the VigLink company, we rebranded it, it will dynamically take that product name that either has a link associated with it or does not, and it will route it to the merchant that is the best for the reader mm-hmm. and will get the publisher the most amount of money. Mm-hmm. That business is today employed. Those products are installed, employed across nearly 30,000 websites. Mm-hmm. There are hundreds of millions of consumer product clicks that occur mm-hmm. monthly on it. And it generates for publishers nearly $1 billion in gross merchandise value. So sales that are actually occurring.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is you can now as a publisher see, I had this article, I talked about noise-canceling headphones, it generated this many product clicks, I generated this much commercial value, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and here's my percentage that I made from that piece of content.
So 50 to 100 million or so in revenue, like clear.
Right. So for the publishers. Right.
And then
we take a very small transaction.
Yeah, that's great. Great example of automation in an area that's sort of.
You can't do that.
Despite being technology enabled, it's still very manual.
Right. It's incredibly manual. So if you were to mention, so on the Ad Exchange, if you were to say, hey, like you should look at this book, Sapiens, you should read Sapiens.
Good book.
Right. It's a great book.
Yeah.
And here's a link to Amazon. So what if they sell it out? Or what if they're no longer paying you a commission on that? Or what if your reader is in Lisbon and mm-hmm. you've put a hard-coded link in there to the U.S. side of Amazon, which won't resolve?
Right.
Like, okay. Or what have you. Like the
reminds me of the old problems with ad ops, which would cause lost revenue for the publisher.
That's exactly right. So there's all these dead links or these links that don't monetize yeah. or like. And so the VigLink product set automates all of that with mm-hmm. all kinds of editorial controls mm-hmm. so that you as a publisher have the editorial control to say, hey, this is what I want to have happen. And okay. then it automatically happens at scale.
Okay, great. So, but meanwhile, Sovereign's traditional competitive set are all mostly still focused on yield through ad auctions.
Right. So we run a very large ad exchange. Mm-hmm. And we're our advertising products are essentially in 3 categories. We have a server-to-server bidder product where we work with Amazon's transparent ad TAM, transparent ad marketplace, or mm-hmm. Google's exchange bidding, or other server-to-server solutions. Mm-hmm. The second product is a header bidding suite. So we'll plug into any standard header bidding wrapper. And then the third product is a standard waterfall product. All of those run through an ad exchange, which we build, and we have connections to every major DSP on the planet. And we're transacting billions of ad requests and impressions a day. It's nearly identical to what you'd see from any other major ad exchange, AppNexus, Rubicon, OpenX, PubMatic. We're all indexed. We're all basically the same.
What's going to happen with that particular – it looks like you're heading towards a future where that kind of capability is a feature, not a product, so to speak, as people like to say. And that your exchange business becomes just one component of the suite. Maybe you're already there, you would say. But what do you think is going to happen to that? You just listed seven companies.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to that competitive set in 2019? Are we going to see – everybody's been predicting a lot of consolidation there for the last two, three years. And it just seems like these companies just – whatever it is, they can hold out.
It reminds me of the I forget the exact circumstance, but in the Hemingway book, The Sun Also Rises, when the conversation was said, how did you go bankrupt? And the guy said, two ways, gradually and then suddenly.
Right.
So not to say that, I'm sorry, I don't need to suggest that people are going to go bankrupt. They're very well,
I think
maybe.
I think you do mean to suggest survivors. there may be fewer than seven, though, at the end of this year.
Possibly. What's happening?
I know there's way more than seven, to be clear, but.
That's right. So there are a lot of subscale.
In terms of the proverbial household names of ad tech?
Well, here's what's happening. So, like, if I like to look at other industries as interesting analogs. So, the one that's probably the easiest to get your mind around is what happened to stockbrokers. So, there was a time, I'm 49 years old, so I remember this, but I like the E.F. Hutton commercials. Right? So, well, my broker's E.F. Hutton, and E.F. Hutton says, and then the whole restaurant goes quiet. And everyone turns and listens. And there's a good spoof on that in the movie Trading Places. But what has happened is those stock brokerages, like Dean Witter or E.F. Hutton, were displaced by people who understood that the actual trading was becoming efficient and the market was going to remove all of the margin opportunities from stock trading. But that didn't mean that it went away. What it meant was E-Trade, Scottrade, Schwab, those types of companies popped up. And they still don't make money on stock trading. They make money on all of the edge products and edge services that help you with your financial life. Right, that's what E-Trade does. So they manage your 401k plan and your bank accounts, and you can get checking accounts, and of course you can do stock trading too. But it's a commodity.
Oh, so this is sovereign's future? Like ad tech is the loss leader, and then everything else is the value add for you?
I mean, it's I don't think it's just for us.
I just don't see this kind of diversification play from that many of your competitors at this time.
I can't speak to what they're doing. I watch what they're doing, and I read, and I listen to the podcasts that you've done. And there's some really smart people that you have in here, and I think they understand this. But if you think about the actual trading dynamics of ad tech, which is one product that we offer publishers. Advertising is an important product for them. They make a lot of revenue from it, but it's not their only source of revenue. And publishers that are really good, I think, and that are trying to build something for the long haul are diversifying their revenue base intentionally. So I know at the Ad Exchange, you guys are highly focused on events. Right. If you look at like the Active Interest Media, which owns about 90 different niche publications, has a whole group focused on horses. And interestingly, they make money. They own also the rodeo events, and they make a lot of money through that. They also own an insurance company that insures your horse and your trailer. It's an interesting diversification. But if you think about it, they're just reaching a passionate audience that has a lot of intention, and they understand a lot about that audience. And they can, of course, they run advertising too, but it's not the only thing they do. And so we think about it that way. When you get to the the advertising transaction layer itself, there are essentially intrinsic costs that you have to hurdle. And this is where I think people will, this business will shake out. So the intrinsic costs are, I have to be able to take on supply, a new publisher. I have to be able to vet that supply on not only on an initial basis, but on an ongoing basis. This is not an inexpensive endeavor. So there are only two exchanges that have now been certified at the platinum level by TAG, us and OpenX. Mm-hmm. And it is a lot of money to do this. And it's a rigorous process. We have third-party auditors come in and audit our process. But that's to ensure that you have a very safe, well-lit, and transparent environment where buyers can buy confidently. Mm-hmm. And so there are intrinsic costs associated with that. You have to do that. Initially, and then on an ongoing basis, you have to service and support your publishers, and you have to do those things. Above and beyond that, what will happen, though, is that margin, there isn't really an extrinsic value for a commodity service. Like, you don't pay extra mm-hmm. because you bought it through Sovereign.
Right.
Like, I really like the guys at Rubicon, and I'm going to pay extra for them. Said no ad agency ever, right?
So what's going to happen to the margins in the ad transaction?
They're going to come down to the intrinsic cost.
They're going to come down to the yeah. intrinsic cost. Does that mean they
and maybe
profit
some
disappears
small,
for that
yeah,
business?
I think so. Okay. And maybe some tiny percentage okay. that enables that business to continue to exist. Mm-hmm. But it will follow every other market that just becomes efficient over time.
So you're raising money last year.
Yes.
And all of your original investors signed up with you again because they you did. Told them the margins for our core business are going to zero.
So this is not a new story for them. So I mean, I've been talking about this actively with our investors for more than 5 years. And I've drawn the, mm-hmm. you know, the S curves of here's what my prediction of the market's going to go. And I look at other markets as analogs, right? I mean, like you can go and look at different industries and this cycle is pretty easy to understand as when things are commodities and there's a lot of competition, and it's highly data-driven, highly automated, what happens is it gets on an efficiency curve. This happens in microprocessors. It happens with, obviously, with your phones are getting, well, Apple would say your phones are getting more expensive, but like they have the ability to charge an extrinsic cost. I mean, that's why you pay a lot of money for Apple versus buying a Samsung phone or something like that. But in a commodity market, you don't have that ability. There's not like a, you know, geez, I really want to buy through Sovereign. So, yes, we convinced our investors to give us a whole bunch more money. It is helpful that we're based in Boulder, Colorado, and Colorado has legalized marijuana. but I'm kidding. We raised a little over $25 million. With the intent to continue to diversify, and we acquired the first of what we plan to be several companies. Mm-hmm. And that one we closed on the Viglink transaction middle of December.
Okay, great. Sort of dialing back from Sovereign for a minute, you talk about these communities of interest that the internet facilitates, and whether it's, you know, cleft palate, bikes, sailing, you know, running,
anything people are
urban
into.
Lifestyles, right. Whatever it might
healthy
be.
Healthy eating, raising a family on a budget, you know, you name it.
And the internet enables fragmented communities, which should be an exciting opportunity for publishers. But we're living through a period in time when it appears the mid-tail is a terrible place to be if you're a publisher. And it's very hard to get the scale needed to build a good business. And so I know what your answer would be. You know, there's these ancillary businesses that can support your
right.
community, whether that be events or paid membership products or
sure.
things like that. But, I mean, the fact remains, it just seems harder than ever for these companies to grow. I wonder what you would say to that. And do you expect a change? Do you think things are going to get easier?
Man, that's a really good question. I think the media business is hard, and I think it's actually supposed to be hard. Like, it's actually hard to create great content. It's hard to engage a good-sized audience. It's hard to get people to crack open their wallet and pay you money for something. It's hard to do all of those things. Yet there are examples when people are happy to do that. But it requires someone to be really good at what they do. And you can't just get away with a kitty cat video. Like, hey, I like kitty cat videos as much as the next guy. Like, did you see the one where they ring the bell? Like, and then they, oh, it's wonderful. No. Like, you show something, they ring the bell. Mesmerizing.
I'm looking right now.
Kidding. not really. So, I don't think you can get away with that anymore. I think you act like I was when we were sort of, you know, talking before we press record. We were talking about a site that I really like to read, which is Stratechery, which is the Ben Thompson site. Mm-hmm. And he runs no ads. It's a you can subscribe to this, you know, to his essentially, you know, four days a week. He sends out a very thoughtful blog post, and it's $100 a year. Mm-hmm. It's a reasonable price to pay, particularly if you're interested in technology. I'm like plugging for Ben right now. I talked to him.
Is there some way to share a referral?
God, I wish.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, sometimes I'll read one of his posts and just the post alone is worth $100. And I do it for the whole year for $100, right? And I saw him last summer at the Recode conference. He was speaking there. And I've known Ben for a little while, not well, but I know him. I was chatting with him over a beer that evening, and I was like, "Dude, how many people, you know, like me? How many knuckleheads like me, like, you know, pay you $100 a year?" And he was pretty cagey about it, but he was like, "It's tens of thousands." Mm-hmm. You can do the math on that, right? Here's mm-hmm. a guy who, but he gets up every morning. Right? He researches all day long in order to write an 800-word or 1,000-word or whatever post. And mm-hmm. and it's a full-time job. And he probably pays researchers and he likes, you know. Mm-hmm. That's his full-time job. But the cat's making a couple million bucks a year, mm-hmm. right? I mean, here's an example of somebody who has it's hard and it's supposed to be hard.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But as long as there are passionate creators, and then the whole idea, Zach, behind Sovereign is help those people who want to do that, mm-hmm. Focus their time and energy on doing that, creating mm-hmm. great content, engaging with their readers, and making that bond better, and then we'll take care of the other things mm-hmm. that take away from or impede your ability to do that first thing.
Got it.
So if you want to make money from advertising, great. You want to make money from e-commerce, great. You want to have products that we have a whole product line called Signal, of another company that we acquired in the UK, that detects the actual reader events that are occurring on your site and then allows you to do things with that, with an event that's occurring. Mm-hmm. So you can run more ads if you want to. You can pop a subscription thing if you want to. You can use the actual interaction or engagement events that are occurring on your site to make decisions about what to do next. Mm-hmm. Like those are all kinds of things that we're working and building mm-hmm. for people.
All right, great. Well, we'll leave it there. But Walter, thank you so much for coming and really great, great discussion. I enjoyed it.
Sure, great. Thanks for having me.
And thank you, listener, for tuning into yet another episode of this Humble Podcast. We will see you next week.
Tune in next week to hear more from Neustar's Alex LePage about their leading identity-based marketing intelligence, or visit marketing.neustar/IDMP to learn more about how Neustar helps top brands build next-level customer journey-driven experiences. Produced by Bigfoot Music and Sound in New York City.